Boss Lady is sponsored by Fraser & Dieter, a top 50 accounting and advisory firm that has been repeatedly named a best firm for women in leadership. Fraser & Dieter is proud to support programming for women executives and entrepreneurs. Learn more at fd.cpa.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Hey Boss Lady. I'm Andrea Gigline.
And I'm Christy Atwater. Our podcast is about women leaders making a difference. We're going to start season three by talking about hope.
You know, Christy, I really loved how you spontaneously from season one just came up with that question about like what gives you hope. So as we go back to listen to these segments, I'd love for you to share with everyone what gives you hope.
Interesting. What gives me hope is I actually see change. I see change in both men and women, and that there's more concern about the greater good than the individual. And I find that so inspiring and enlightening to me, who, you know, by all accounts, really was not just out for myself, but, you know, head down, just trying to meet my own goals and not necessarily thinking about the greater impact. And the younger generation, or just the generations today, there's a lot more discussions about that. And so that gives me a lot of hope.
Yes, I am with you on that. And I will tell you that early in my training, you know, I don't know if I ever gave a lot of thought to hope, but I came across a researcher and he was working with children who really had lost, they never lost anything because they never had anything to start with, whether it was the environment, parents, there was zero advantage. And what he had realized in his work is that if you could give that child something to hope for, some degree of being able to see that where you are at this second does not have to be that way, that you could start the building blocks to resilience. So I think that's why your question has always just touched me so much, because it always brings me back to the very simple thought, like, what does give me hope in this moment, no matter what it looks like?
Yeah, it keeps you going. We thought about all of the women we've interviewed and what their answers were to this question, and we thought we'd share some of their stories and responses. One of them, Kima Ogden, is an entrepreneur and community advocate in Las Vegas, president of the Ogden Foundation, married to former NFL Hall of Famer Jonathan Ogden. She runs a nonprofit community clinic medical center for uninsured and underinsured people, and she's an advocate in the Las Vegas cannabis community. A lot of what she does in her community is about helping people. Let's hear a little bit of her story.
You know, I grew up in Las Vegas, and so this community is very near and dear to my heart. You know, sure. I've been one of those people growing up that needed help at times. My mom was a single parent, and growing up in that environment, a lot of times we had to reach out and see what we could do. And it was really important to get that help. And so early on, I knew it was important to give back when you can. And you know, like you mentioned, we are very much in the trenches, you know.
Right.
Nonprofit work is a grind. You know, you don't do it for money at all. There's no money in it. Matter of fact, you give money constantly. You do it because you have passion for it.
The need and you take care of it.
You do it. And I feel like it's our responsibility to really have our children see that, and so that they, generation after generation, can help. You know, in order for the economy and things to be successful, no matter what you believe, whether you believe in helping people or not, it matters. It really will help your business if the next man is doing better and can spend money
in the
economy. So I look at it as a win-win for people who could care less. I tell them, like, listen, you can step over that person, but it still affects you. So why not help?
And in a nutshell, it's those young people she works with who inspire her.
you know, like I said, what gives me hope before when I mentioned like just getting our kids involved, seeing the younger generation really starting to pay attention to what's happening out there, speaking Great. Up, getting involved in issues that are affecting their future. Mm-hmm. We've seen it with different protests. We see it with social justice and advocacy work. We see it in patient advocacy work. So, you know, I think the younger generation gives me hope as they're starting. I feel like they're paying more attention to what's happening in politics and yep. and in business and the economy. And so I'm hopeful that they'll demand change and really get aggressive about what needs to be done to help people in the community. Because most of it stems from your government and your legislative and your local right. government and officials and things like right. that. And really getting involved with the change
yes.
On the ground floor in your state yep. is really important. And so I'm hopeful that we will see that.
You know, Christy, when I think about all of the talks that we've had with different people, and I think back on, you know, what was it about the guests that was showing hope that were, you know, when you would ask that question, I've got to tell you one, because of my stage in life right now, was Linda Neal. And that, you know, she was part
oh,
of our
yeah,
season
I loved her.
One. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was amazing.
When I keep thinking about how in her late 50s, she made a decision after having all of, I mean, her journey, her career journey could not be more crooked. And having created in the, you know, tail end of it, this incredible wine, to then devote herself to learning Arabic, joining the Peace Corps. And what our audience, you know, an update on that, you know, just like everything else that happened in the pandemic, she got airlifted out of her Peace Corps role in 24 hours in March of 2020. And yet again, had to, you know, redig, where's the hope coming from now?
Yeah, she is one who gives me a lot of hope for the future, for aging. You know who else does? Rita yeah. Glosser.
Oh, absolutely.
She just handles things with such grace and humility and, is really inspirational, starting her own business
at 67. I mean, we yeah, interviewed her. Yeah. I think she was like 88 or something like that. But at 67, she started that business, and that doesn't give you hope. Nothing should.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. A total inspiration. We'll be back with more stories on Hey Boss Lady right after this. Everybody, you're listening to Hey Boss Lady, our podcast about women leaders making change. I'm Christy Atwater.
And I'm Andrea Gigline. We're in the midst of so much change in the way we work, in the way we live, in the way we think about what's important.
In the midst of it all, the power of women is growing. We're making gains in the workplace, in corporate boardrooms, and in the marketplace.
In season 3, we'll focus on that change and the future ahead.
I think it's really important to remember that women have collective power.
Yes.
And with collective power comes the possibility of huge societal and business change.
That's Missy Munoz, leader of ESG at Fraser & Dieter.
Join us on Hey Boss Lady for our conversation with Missy and meet all the women we've been talking to this season as we focus on the future and what it means to us.
Welcome back to Hey Boss Lady. Andrea and I have been talking about hope. What gives women hope for the future?
I want to bring in another one of our past guests, Laura Lynn Sandoval. She's Vice President of New Markets for Aristocrat Technologies and the former First Lady of the state of Nevada. She didn't have an easy childhood. Let's hear a bit about her backstory, where it all began, and how it changed her.
I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, California. In Encino, the original Valley Girl.
I haven't heard one like.
Yeah. No. That took years to get out of the vocabulary. That and surfer talk. Yeah. But I grew up in Encino, one of seven children, middle child, first girl. What was unique in my family is I had two severely disabled siblings, my oldest brother and my second youngest sister. And in the time that I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, there, you know, that was the time when people were still being advised to put these children in institutions and not let anybody know that mm-hmm. you had this child or sibling that mm-hmm. had disabilities. And it was very challenging for our family. And, you know, I equate growing up with someone with severe disabilities as waking up in trauma every single day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so life is every day waking up in trauma and navigating your way through that. Mm-hmm. Whatever your position in the family is and how you deal with that really speaks volumes for what your future is going to look like and your yes. family's future is going to look like. But it was difficult, but it's the only thing I ever knew is what
yes.
I tell people.
Yes.
So I didn't know it was difficult, but I really always liked doing a bunch of things. Like I always liked giving back to the community because our parents taught us you're a member of community and that's what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always involved in some form or fashion with our community. I always liked sports.
Uh-huh.
And so I was always involved in sports, but I was always the kid who was pretty good, but not the best. But, you know, what was pivotal for me is when I was about 11 or 12 years old, I played tennis for the first time.
Oh.
And I played tennis. My mom gave me a tennis lesson. And I was playing with two other girls who went to my rival grammar school.
Okay.
And they were best friends. And I told my mom, I'm never playing tennis again.
Not again.
This is horrible. You know, they're best friends and I'm out there all by myself. And I was a very shy child. I never spoke to anybody.
Okay.
And, you know, I went to go stay with my cousins for a summer and they played tennis. So I had to play tennis. And, I won the little tournament with uh-huh. my cousins. And then I came back to Los Angeles and I said to my mom, yeah, I like this tennis. And because I won, it felt good.
That does feel good.
And I said, can I, you know, get a real tennis racket now? And she said, yes, after you win your first tennis tournament, instead of getting the wood rackets out of the bin at the tennis store that everyone was returning to get their graphite ones, mm-hmm. I'll buy you a tennis racket. So I went out and I won the first tennis tournament that I played in, USTA tennis tournament. And that really changed my life.
Wow.
And that coach my mom introduced me to changed my life. Because I would, like I said, I was a very shy child.
Right.
And I continued taking tennis lessons with those two girls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, that's great.
Yeah, Diane Weldon and Erin O'Neill, who are still my friends to this day.
Wow, okay.
And we all went to the same high school and tried out for the same tennis team.
Wow.
And they made the tennis team and I did not.
Oh, no.
Even though I was consistently, you know, as good as them in tournaments and winning tournaments, but the coach at the high school said to me, you're not tough enough, so I don't think you're ready. I'm going to put you on JV. And Lee Hudson was my coach's name. She walked into the president of the high school's office and said, you're firing that coach, and I'm going to teach your tennis team for free.
Whoa.
Wow.
And so she became the tennis coach for the high school, coaching me, Erin, Diane, and she began to coach other individuals, too, outside of the tennis season. She never charged me for lessons. I got to clean tennis courts for her instead.
Wow.
And then I got to participate in clinics in this Calabasas Tennis Club, where all the really good tennis players went to clinics. And, again, we didn't have money, and Doug Doss, who was the pro leading the clinics, let me do accounting work in the office in exchange for these clinics. And sometimes paying, I'm sure my grandmother helped pay for that sometimes as well. But really, all of these great people helping me get to be a really excellent tennis player changed my life because that's how I got to college. I had a tennis
yes.
scholarship to the University of Nevada, Reno.
Her story is about more than mentors, though. It's about tenacity. Something she showed she had early on when she got her first break in the gaming industry.
I had an internship at an advertising company in Reno when I was in college, and that advertising company had casino clients.
Ah.
And when I was the intern, I was the grunt doing all of the research, and the research was being done for two companies, MGM, the mm-hmm. resort company, and IGT, a slot machine manufacturer, about international growth. And I just thought to myself when I went back to Los Angeles and I couldn't get a job in film, you know, these companies are going to grow.
Yes.
This is going to be an international business. At the time, it was basically Nevada and New Jersey. And I am going to go and be in this business. I'm not going to work at MGM at the resort because I don't want to work on Christmas and Thanksgiving. That was, that was my whole logic, by the way. No
yeah,
other
like
logic
hey,
than that.
Whatever it takes.
So I'm going to go and apply for a job at IGT, this slot machine manufacturer. But there was no job. So I wasn't applying for a job. I just sent my resume to human resources, and then I sent it to the president of the company, and then I just kept calling and faxing and writing to the president of the company for about a year.
Oh my gosh.
It's asking for any job. I think probably in some of my letters I wrote, I'll be on the production line, I'll prove myself to you.
Any job.
Any job. And I found out the story later, but it turns out his administrative assistant, was so tired of hearing from me. She said, please just interview this girl and get her out of my hair.
I love it.
Yes. That really, you know, so many places in your story, we're hearing, like when we opened up and said that, you know, there was a path of resilience. There was a path of curiosity. There was a path of so many things and adversity. But what has intrigued me is that where you are today with new and emerging markets is actually what you did when you got into the industry. It was like you did a quick assessment of this, where is it going to grow? And then you, yeah, maybe it had to do with Christmas and all of that stuff. And I do definitely understand that because I would have stayed definitely away from anything that took me away from the holidays. It was really you looking and doing an assessment of where is the growth, where is the growth, where is the growth. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I'd never thought about it that way before. And everybody thought I was crazy, by the way. All of my family thought I was insane. No one told me getting into gaming was a good idea. Mm-hmm. In fact, everybody told me it was a bad idea.
Of course, she went on to become incredibly successful. She's currently vice president of new technologies for Aristocrat Technologies, and she's done many other things in gaming. Through it all, she looks forward and she is full of hope.
I am an eternal optimist, and I really believe that the best of the world is yet to come if we focus on what is good and what is right for humanity. Mm-hmm. So I really believe that with more people who understand the needs of people with disabilities, especially as they move into adulthood, that humanity will do the right thing to help those people. I really believe that as people understand that women were left behind and that as women start to learn they cannot harm each other, they have to help each other, I really believe that the future is really bright and that you will see women, and you're starting to see women, do every single thing in the world that's available to any man. And I think that will continue to happen. And I just look forward to seeing how great it will all be.
Well, that's our show for today. I'm Christy Atwater.
And I'm Andrea Gigline. If you've got a story to share, send us a message on our Facebook page. And if you like the show, please share it with your friends.